Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White. Happy to have you with us today and happy to have these guys with me here as well. Morning, Brian.
Morning, Brad.
Philip.
Hey, Brad.
And Bob.
Hello, guys.
Dustin is actually traveling at a meeting today, so won't be able to join us. So it's just the four of us, and we'll have a chance to talk about a couple issues that are, I think, pretty darn relevant. The first one being, how do we reduce winter feed cost? The second, as we come up on the new year, what kind of records do we want to keep? How do we want to handle that? And the third one, we're going to talk about circling disease in cows. And I'll get Brian and Bob's opinion on how I can try to manage that, and Phillip's on how I can try to prevent it. Before we get into those, I was thinking about you guys the other day, and I wanted to know, if you were going to be on a game show, which game show do you think you would be the best at and why? But I also have a list that you can choose from. So it will either be Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, Price is Right, or Name That Tune. Obviously, these are not all recent game shows, but...
Yeah. You know, I struggle with that Wheel of Fortune game thing. So I'm going to say Jeopardy.
Jeopardy. Yeah. All right. Philip?
Mine would probably not be Jeopardy. I am not very good at random facts.
Well, my family says that's the only stuff I know. Trivia that doesn't matter.
Random facts.
Yeah. Mine would probably be Wheel of Fortune, because I think I'd probably be better at guessing the letters and figure out the phrase.
Brian?
I would say Name That Tune, but only for specific genres of music. So I'm actually going to go Price is Right. I just need luck, I guess.
Yeah, you could go for that little guy riding up the hill, or you could spin the big wheel. There's all kinds of fun activities
Plinko.
You could do on Price is Right. Yeah, yeah. Plinko.
We'll do Plinko.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think now we know where you guys rank on your game shows, but let's think about one of the questions that we get relatively frequently is, how can I better manage and reduce those winter feeding costs, especially this year? We've been dry. We didn't have as much stockpiled forage in much of the country, so people had to start feeding hay a little bit sooner. We've had several cold snaps already, which are going to increase some of our hay feeding. Philip, I'm going to start with you. What would be some of your tips to somebody that wanted to reduce some of their winter feed cost?
Well, I feel like you handed me a $1 million loaded question, because it's hard. I mean, there is not a whole lot you can do to reduce your winter feed costs when in a drought year, when you don't have enough moisture to plant some winter annuals. You're out of stockpiled native prairie pasture. I mean, you're just down to feeding, hauling feed to cows. And so the thing to try to find the cheapest feed source you can. But when you're looking at that feed source, make sure you're paying attention to the nutritional value of it, not just the poundage.
So not just dollars per pound, but like dollars per pound of energy, or dollars per pound of protein.
That's a good point, because lots of different densities of energy and or protein in the feed.
Yeah, and so paying attention to that is probably the best way to try to manage your winter feed costs, because you know you're going to have to buy feed. You're probably going to have to buy hay, and so getting it tested and knowing what the cost per unit of nutrient is. Because like this year is a year where nothing is normal. And so forage testing pays for itself this year, especially when you're going to go buy something and know how much it's worth to get a fair price.
Well, I got a question for you, Philip. So let's say I've really been working hard to try to identify a less expensive energy source for my cows, and I find something. Maybe it's distiller's grains, or I find something that's going to lower my cost compared to what I've been using. But, you know, for the last couple of months, they've been on some cubes or something. Do I have to worry about a transition as I move from one feedstuff to another?
It depends. And one of the big things to pay attention to is what type of carbohydrate is in the new feedstuff. A feedstuff that is going to have a lot of starch, and you've got to be feeding, you know, probably if you've got really poor quality hay and you're trying to keep cows in good condition, you're probably feeding 7-8 pounds a day of this energy supplement. Then jumping a cow from a protein cube to a high starch type of feedstuff, or high sugar, like if you get some cold breakfast cereal, or you get some, you know, that kind of thing.
Or just corn or something.
Yeah, or you can get corn milling byproducts and things like that. Not just distiller's grains, but corn screenings and things like that have a lot of starch content still to them. That becomes an issue. Now, if you're switching to something like distiller's grains or soy hulls or something that's a fiber carbohydrate, they have a lot of energy, but it's still fiber, like the forage is. You could switch from one day to the next with no problem.
So I can switch the type of feed pretty easily if it's a fiber source rather than a starch source.
Yeah, as long as the type of carbohydrate is the same, the switch is easy. If you're switching types of carbohydrate, that's when you run into problems.
If I'm going toward starch, but if I go starch to fiber carbohydrates, am I okay?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a one-way street there. If you're going from fiber to starch, it's a problem. Going from starch to fiber is not generally a problem.
Yep. So basically, all the stuff we know about, hey, if I'm starting them on corn, I probably need to pay attention to what I'm doing. Going the other direction, I should be okay. But I think those are good things to think about. The other thing I would bring into this discussion is we talked about it may be even hard to get feedstuffs. So if you were going to plot out, plan, is this the time of year where you'd plan and say, hey, what have I got available? What do I need to get? And maybe if I'm going to have to make a decision, as much as we hate to talk about it, on culling cows, I'm better to do it now than to put feed into them until March and have to get rid of them then.
Yeah. And I think planning feedstuffs is very important this year and this time of year, because this is when you're, and even before now, you're getting into the time of year when you're going to have to really start delivering feed by hand or truck or whatever it is to the cows. And so having that plan, do I have enough? And giving yourself time to go find those good deals. Because if you get to the point where, oh, shoot, I've got to have a new batch of feed for next week, I don't have the opportunity to go find that good deal and to negotiate a good price or anything. I'm kind of stuck just getting what I can get in the short term.
Yeah. I think probably we've talked about it earlier in the year, and so it's getting later. But one of the things you said is I sure don't want to feed cows that aren't going to be productive. So make sure that you've preg checked and gotten rid of any open cows, maybe even late bred cows, because they're not going to be as productive. And so really make sure that any feed that I'm using is going towards productive purposes. And part of that is trying to avoid wastage. And we do know that cows will, you know, they'll waste hay, particularly, especially as we're kind of using some of these poor quality forages. They know that they're not as delicious, and they're going to kind of waste it more. So there was a study done relatively recently at Purdue that looked at, and this really works in, you know, smaller herds or herds where you're going to handle the cows every day or something like that. But they basically, you know, put the bales in a dry lot and excluded the cows most of the day and only allowed the cows to have access to the hay, you know, like 8 hours a day or 12 hours a day. And if they reduced the access of the cows to that 8 hours or 12 hours a day, they wasted less. So they probably still ate about, because their body condition stayed the same. So they probably ate about the same amount as if they had been with the hay all the time, but they just wasted less. They just, you know, pulled it out of the bales and stomped it into the mud less when they didn't give them as much. And, you know, that's a lot of labor. That's a lot of problems, you know, daily interaction. But on a year when you're really, really tight on forage, it might be worth it this year.
Yeah. Between that and the type of bale feeders you're using, how you're putting it out there, that sort of thing matters as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. There's a couple studies, one done in Oklahoma and one in Michigan, I think it was, that looked at different types of bale feeders. And the type of bale feeder can make a pretty big difference in the amount of hay wastage. Bale feeders seems to be the bale feeders that keep the bale up off the ground, reduce wastage, and the cow is pulling bite by bite out of there and not just sticking her head in the bale feeder, where, and that it's all, she only eats it from the top down. She's eating from the bottom up, so to speak. And those cone type feeders will reduce wastage.
I'm thinking about doing that with potato chips at our house. I should put them up where they have a cone like that, so that when the kids are grabbing them, they just have to grab a chip or two at a time.
One or two at a time.
Rather than just putting their head in the bag.
Maybe you're onto something there. I don't know.
So it's worth a try. And I jest about it, but makes a big difference. And we're talking sometimes 10 to 20% more wastage, depending on what situation, how you feed, could be even more than that. Makes a huge difference in your hay bill. Nobody's sending you a bill for that, so you'll have to be the one to pay attention to it. And as we think about bills, few of us like paying bills. You get to the end of the year, but sometimes it's also a time to reflect and do some planning on what's up for next year. And we talk about records a lot, and I want to get the three of you, and I'm going to kind of pin you down on this one and say, okay, if I'm going to keep records for next year and I've got a cow-calf herd, Should I be keeping individual records or herd average records? And I'll let you pick your position and then we can kind of discuss. Brian?
What are we keeping records for?
Production records. The only records I'm keeping. Yep.
Okay. Because for me, you know, I think when I think of records, I think about like antibiotic use and things like that. And for me, those are very much individual records. And I think even the production records, I'm going to say individual.
I think it depends a little bit on your goals. But if you're selecting animals out of your own herd to keep as replacements, then I think individual records has a lot of benefit in that situation. If you're buying replacement animals, then maybe not.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna say that individual records, while nice, are not absolutely essential because I tend to manage in groups. So I'll manage my heifers this year as a group, and so I really want to know how that group performs. And you know, so some of the things that I do want to keep track of. Well, first of all, I want a good inventory. I want to really know how many cows I have, and I like to know some individual animal information that then I put into groups. Like I like to know, well, what's my age distribution? How many old cows do I have? How many, you know, first calving, second calving cows? And so, but again, I can kind of keep track of that as a group. I need to know that there's 20 first cow calf heifers, and I need, you know, that there's 15 second pregnancy cows. And so because I make decisions as groups, I'm evaluating my management as a group, and I'm managing the cattle as group. That's the most important thing to me. That being said, sometimes, a lot of times, it's just as easy to keep track of individual records and then kind of put them into a group. But it's really the group that I'm managing, not individuals very much.
And Brian's comment is the exception to the rule, right? Yep. Antibiotic treatments would be, or any treatments would be, the exception that you're going to have to write that down on the individual.
Yeah, and yes, I totally agree with that. And then, but even on health, so the two areas where I really do like having some records to look at is looking at my pregnancy, my breed up, and also some health issues. But what I want to know is who isn't pregnant. And by who, I don't mean individuals. I mean, which age group of cows is my predominant number of open cows in? Which bull breeding pasture do my... So I want to know which cows ended up not pregnant and some description of that group, not the individuals, but the group. Same thing with health. Calves that get sick, what's common about those calves? Are they mostly calves from my heifers? Are they mostly calves from a certain pasture? Are they mostly calves born in the third week of the calving season? So I'm always interested in groups. And sometimes if we just look at the individuals, we'll miss the picture that the group is trying to tell us, that, wow, these individual calves are mostly calves that were born in the third or fourth week of calving season. Well, that's really important to know.
And as usual, you're a step ahead of me, because my next question was going to be, what are the main records you're interested in getting and why? And you talked about who's not pregnant. And then if they're getting sick, what do they have in common for some of those calves? So Brian and Philip, I'll turn to you guys with the same question of what do you really want to know? Because let's face it, when I could keep a lot of records, but I run out of both time and attention. So I only want to keep track of things that are important. What would be one or two things you would think would be important that you'd want to keep? And you can echo what Bob said or go a different direction.
Sorry, I'm still stuck that Mr. Every Cow Has to Bring Me a Calf only wants group records.
You're not supposed to listen to the previous podcasts, Brian. You're just supposed to go with what he says today.
Okay. I guess I'll take the health aspect. And I think what you said is right. The records, what you keep in the records is a little bit tailored to what you want to know. And so I don't know that production records and health records have the exact same pieces of data that I want to collect. But I'll say for health, I want to know which animal. I want to know what they were treated with. I want to know the date of that treatment. I want to know what the disease I'm treating or the diagnosis was. And that's probably a good minimum, because, and I'm thinking backwards, Brad. So I think the things that are important to me are the withdrawal time. So for a food safety perspective, if I know when they were treated and I know what they were treated with, I can work backwards and figure that out. If I know what disease they were treated for and what drug they were treated with, then I can calculate, or I can determine my treatment response rate. So if somebody comes to me and says, well, this drug isn't working as well as it used to, you know, oftentimes that's kind of a off the cuff or gut feeling. I want to go back and look at the records and be able to determine, well, is that really right? Or is there something else going on? So those are kind of my minimums.
I tend to look at it from a kind of a genetic selection standpoint, and from in a cow-calf herd, that's why I like individuals. And there's two pieces of information that would be critical: birth date of the calves and weaning weight of the calves, because I'm going to use that information to determine which females I want to keep heifer calves from and which individual heifer calves I want to keep. So if I'm trying to say moderate cow size, and we've talked a lot about cow efficiency on here, and the industry's talking a lot about cow efficiency, then I don't want to necessarily keep the biggest heifers, and because they might have the highest weight per day of age, which means a higher mature size and mature body weight. And so I want to know what the age is, and I want to look at keeping some of the older heifers that are also good at a good weight. And so I get a good breed up on my heifers, but I'm not increasing my cow size because I'm just taking the biggest heifers every year.
I think these are really good perspectives. And a lot of it, you could incorporate parts of what all three of you said into your operation. And you're still not asking me to keep very many records. So I would encourage you, you don't have to keep absolutely everything, but figure out what is your minimum that you can try to get. Because that will let you get it, right? I can get preg check, I can get treatment records, I can get birth dates and weaning weights. I can do some of those things with also a pretty minimalistic record keeping system. We've talked before, sometimes it's the burden that gets us worn down a little bit. I want to switch gears because I did mention we were going to talk about it at the top, and we will sometimes see cows, and it can be at this time of year, a lot of times in the winter. You may see a cow with circling disease or listeriosis. And Bob, I'm going to turn to you first and ask, what is this that we would see? And then Brian, I'm going to ask you a little about the clinical signs.
Yeah, well, I think you're going to jinx me and some cattle producer because I haven't had this call yet this year, but I get it almost every winter about this time. And the typical history is cattle that are eating either silage or baleage. And there is an organism that's common in the soil. So it's going to be in the silage. It's going to be in the baleage. But if you have a good ensiling process where the pH drops rapidly, you'll kill off that organism and it's not a problem. But if you don't have a good pH drop, you can get this organism called Listeria to multiply, and it can cause cows to have this neurologic sign, like you say. They're circling. They don't appear to be paying attention to where they are. So something about their brain isn't working right. They can abort, and they can die as well. So it is something usually associated with the winter because that's when we tend to feed these types of feeds.
Brian, anything Bob missed?
Yeah, the other reason we tend to see it this time of year is it's actually one of the few bacteria that can grow in colder temperatures. And that's one of the things in the diagnostic lab that we would do is we would grow it at a cool temperature. So, but no, Bob's right. It proliferates in silage or baleage where they haven't been properly ensiled. Right. The big challenge with listeriosis is that when you start seeing the clinical signs of it in a group of cattle, you've probably already fed through. So it's not the whole, it's usually not the whole batch of silage, could be the whole batch of baleage, but usually not. So it's kind of, it's pockets, right? And so when we see it, we've already fed through it. And so it can be really challenging to diagnose other than just the clinical signs of the disease. And then if you do have an animal that died, you can do post-mortem and isolate the bacteria. But it's like Bob said, the biggest challenge with it is it's just a sporadic disease. So you can't predict it. You don't know when it's going to happen. The silage grossly looks normal. So yeah, it would be a little difficult.
Well, that's the problem is at that point, like you said, it is based on the pH. If it's properly ensiled or your baleage or your silage, then you wouldn't have a problem because it would have killed this bacteria. However, there can be patches or pockets, as you describe them, in that bag or in that pile that could cause potential problems. And our main treatment here is don't feed silage or baleage that has listeria in it, which means actually, right? I mean, that's is there a different
that's
treatment?
That's not very practical.
It's not very practical. No. Yeah. So you got to figure out what to do and how to manage that well, kind of from the start. Which I realize we're already past that point now, but this is when we see the disease. Any tips or tricks there, Philip?
Well, I mean, I guess looking at it from like when you're putting it up, is the two things that we talk about silage all the time is make sure that you get it packed well and anaerobic, and there's enough moisture in the hay or the corn silage or whatever you're doing to make it anaerobic and drop that pH fast. The problem with baleage is twofold. One, if you don't get it put up wet enough, then it doesn't pack and ferment, become anaerobic. And number two, you're rolling up a whole plant. The sugars inside the plant have not been released out of the cells, and so the bacteria don't ferment those sugars to drop the pH. And grass hay doesn't have very much sugar to begin with, and so rolling up things like fescue or brome or anything like that is, you just don't have very much sugar in there to ferment and reduce the pH.
Way different than if we're doing something like corn silage.
Yes, yeah.
Because you've got a lot different mix. And I think that's the key thing on this. And the other point I'd bring up that these guys kind of alluded to is, so it is a neurologic condition. Talk to your vet. Figure out what it is, because there are some things that will mimic this. I called it circling disease, and they do look like they're circling, but sometimes they can look like they're blind. Sometimes they can do some odd things. Bob mentioned a lack of awareness, which I was going to ask you how you're testing that. But
Bob's like, crazy cow.
Do you know you're in the pasture?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
He asked some questions. So, but then it could be some other things, because if it's the important reason that you might want to diagnose it is because if it's listeriosis, I know what I'm dealing with. I know that it may recur. I may want to try to manage things a little bit differently next year. But if it's something else,
one of the other things
I want to find out what that is and manage that appropriately. So happy to have that discussion on listeriosis. Hopefully you do not see that this year. I thought good discussion. You guys had good input on the records. I would also mention, and we've started released a couple weeks ago, our new podcast, Bovine Science with BCI, that has a little more in-depth discussion on some of the diseases, some of the nutrition. If you're interested in listening to that, same form, except for it's a one-on-one discussion with each of the experts on different topics. It's available on the same places we have our normal podcast listed. As always, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, you can always send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.